right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to Cafe Scientifique. My name is Zachary Weber. I am the staff educator of adult programs here at the Carnegie Science Center. I'd like to welcome you tonight. Our speaker tonight is Dr. Andrew Rose Watson, and he is the medical director of the Center for Connected Medicine. A fourth-generation surgeon and the sixth in his family, Watson attended Trinity College and subsequently earned his master's degree at the University of Oxford in England, studying 17th century British architectural history. He attended medical school at Columbia University in New York and returned to Pittsburgh for his surgical training and minimally invasive fellowship at UPMC. Currently, he practices in the division of colorectal surgery and specializes in minimally invasive inflammatory bowel disease surgery. Everybody finished their dinner, right? All right. More than 75% of Dr. Watson's time is focused on healthcare thought leadership discussions, telemedicine, and information technologies. Currently, he is a vice president of the UPMC International and Commercial Services Division and is an executive director for telemedicine. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Andrew Watson.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. And the world I live in changes very quickly, as do my titles that are numerous and somewhat silly, if I might say so. But I love what I do, and it's a pleasure to be here, especially at this institution. And it's astounding that it's over 20 years old, obviously, founded in 1991, so it's been here for quite a while, and that's impressive. But I grew up in Pittsburgh, and I've been in Pittsburgh, and it's a pleasure to see some familiar faces and meet some new faces here and to talk to you about this extraordinary phenomenon about the digital age and healthcare. And I serve in a variety of roles at UPMC, and I was just changed to be the Chief Medical Information Officer of our International Commercial Services Division, and then I still practice surgery. I operated for about 12 or 14 hours last Friday. I saw two patients this afternoon that I will explain to you what I did. And then it's a fascinating world that we work in and live in. And quite frankly, it's a hard world to keep up with. And I hope in the next 40 minutes or so, 45 minutes, that we can explain to you what happened to healthcare. And feel free to raise your hand or interrupt if you have any questions. And I'll tell you that I had the amazing experience of going to Oxford. And if you were to give a talk in Oxford, if you didn't like it, the first thing you do is you start moving in your chairs, which makes an enormous amount of noise, and you start ruffling papers. And if it was outrageous what you said, such as the word Cambridge, you would actually open the bar, and people would go get horribly drunk and inebriated and come back, and then that was the end of the speaker. So I'm used to a fair amount of heckling, so feel free to have a go at it. So first of all, people have a very morbid fascination with what I do is colorectal surgery. So that's what I do for a living. I operate on things that are on fire. And people want to know some of the gory details. I'm not going to tell you because of dinner, Zach. Don't worry. But the bar is still open in case you can't tell. And if you wonder what it's like in the OR, there's nothing to be concerned about at all. No worries. Things are fine and predictable. And the post-operative symptoms are just fine. So, so if you have to come see me in my office, not to be concerned whatsoever. Enjoy it, please. But I do love what I do, and I'm conflicted a lot of times when I go to work, and it's not an issue about anything here in Pittsburgh. It's about patient care throughout the United States, and it's an era of healthcare that's going to come to an end, and it should come to an end. And when patients come to see me in clinic, they don't know really who I am or what I do. They know why they're there to see me, but patients really don't have any idea how good I am or if I'm any good. In fact, the leading website says that I practice thoracic surgery at McGee Hospital. And so I received a wide array of congratulatory emails from my peers across the country, but I've actually never practiced thoracic surgery. I don't have privileges at McGee. So that's about as much information as you can find about me online. But I do specialize in Crohn's and ulcerative colitis. I have not had a leak from an intestine for about 3 years right now, which is the lowest rate in Pittsburgh. I have the shortest length of stay, the lowest ER utilization, the lowest postoperative colonoscopies, and no one gets labs, if possible, after surgery. So it's a process of trying to create quality in the operative environment. And how do we get that across to patients and consumers, as well as the people that pay for insurance? And so the digital era coming to us is what I want to talk about. And I'm still not quite sure what's going to happen to me. I'm not sure if I'll have a job in 2 years, what information I'll use, what devices I'll use, and where I'll practice surgery. So I can't believe anyone showed up to hear about healthcare. It's unbelievable. If you look at the what's going on in Washington and Pittsburgh and other areas, that healthcare seems to be in tremendous turmoil right now. And it's been in turmoil for a while. We just haven't talked about it. But it's changing, and it's changing for the better. And I think that you will see an enormous change in healthcare in the next 5 years or so. We hear about the Affordable Care Act, but we hear it's now unaffordable because the government is shut down. And then we have the lovely Mitt Romney. And I have to get into politics. I can't help myself. I will avoid Sarah Palin, but I will take a couple stabs at Mitt Romney if I could. He had the right idea, and Obama effectively copied him, and then he denied it. And then the Obamacare is way overfunded, which is going to be an enormous challenge. So it's not a Democratic issue or Republican issue. We just have a significant problem. And then you have John Edwards, who was almost our vice president. Anyone know how he made his money? $140 million? Suing doctors. Which kind? Getting warmer, like a rabbit hunt. Obstetricians, that's good. So then how did he do it? He read the rhythm strips from the obstetricians and would read the uterine monitor saying, where's my doctor? Why isn't he here? He would channel dead children inside him and saying, read that to the jury, the rhythm strips. Incredible. Almost our vice president. So I wouldn't lean heavily on the political landscape right now. This is changing very quickly, and there's the politicians are looking at this, and they have to, but it's just an emotionally charged issue in our country right now. And I'm glad we're finally tackling it. Certainly the first Clinton administration tried to do this, and maybe there'll be another Clinton administration, I don't know. But by and large, that our government is trying to look at this issue, and it's incredible that you came to hear about healthcare considering all that's going on right now. So the end of the world is coming, as we know. Martin Luther said in 1600 it would end in 1600, but it fortunately didn't. And then John Napier said it'd end in 1688 based on calculations in the Book of Revelations. And then Bernoulli, of Bernoulli's principle, had a stab at it. He also said a comet would come and destroy the earth. And I actually gave the graphic of that. And then Nostradamus, of course, said 1999, the king of terror would come from the sky. And even Sir Isaac Newton took a stab at it, said 2060. And CNN thinks it happens every day. Pat Robertson had a number of shots at this, too, and he changed his figures about five times, so I decided just to list one of them. So people think the end of the world is coming for healthcare, but it really isn't. It is not coming. And I will tell you that I honestly think that in our lifetime that we will see the transformation of healthcare that is normal, it's natural, it's necessary, and unstoppable. And we will see probably the best form of healthcare we've ever seen. And it will be a byproduct of some of the things happening here in Pittsburgh and also what our government is doing. And it's also the evolution of healthcare with the digital age. And what an incredible thing we're about to see. And I hope to give you a flavor of that. There is concern about what we're doing right now, and I don't want to get too much into the Prozac facts here, but if you have some Prozac and could hand it around and share it, please do for the next 5 minutes. But it's worth pointing out that the trajectory that healthcare is on is going to change. Don Berwick, there's an amazing movie called Escape Fire you should all watch. It's on Netflix these days. Talk about the digital age. Here's a little factoid. Did you know that about half of the internet traffic is from Netflix? Isn't that incredible? So you can be one of those electrons flowing around. He said, can we please stop and make sense of the situation and think about the situation and try to get our way out of it? And he ran CMS, and that's the organization in our government that oversees Medicare and Medicaid. And 75% of healthcare costs go to treating chronic diseases that are largely preventable, which is also challenging. 95% of the time, where are you folks? Home or work? Do we offer healthcare at home or work? Boy, that's strange. We have the world's largest industry at $2.7 trillion, not even aimed at the consumers. And then Sebelius, who is actually a very good person, and even a very moderate Republican who I sat with the other day, who ran CMS for 3 years, spoke very highly of her. And she's getting tarred and feathered after this website, sadly. But she said, we are in the grips of a very big industry, and it doesn't know how to, or it doesn't want to stop making money. And that's a national problem that we have. And what's most amazing about healthcare is the last one. The Institute of Medicine, which is our moral compass, our watchdog, says that about 30% of healthcare spending, that's about $750 billion, is wasted. Shocking figure. So This is not a Mitt Romney issue. This is not a Barack Obama issue. This is not a Sarah Palin issue. This is not a Sebelius issue. Healthcare, as we know it, will change. And it will change for the better. So please, I beg you, don't call it Obamacare or Romneycare. Call it healthcare reform. Long before Obama and Romney, that look how much we spend on our healthcare compared to others. This is not a politician of based on the last two elections. It isn't. Look how few times Americans actually go and see their doctors compared to our counterparts in other parts of the world in developed countries. People in the United States don't live longer based on how much we spend. Look at us. We're way up there. So our life expectancy is down compared to others, and some of this is genetic, of course. But look how much we spend compared to the others. You know, value is how much you spend and what you get from your spending. I would say based on that, we get a low value for a healthcare dollar, which is extremely expensive. Surgery, what I do, is a bit pricey, too. Just don't tell my boss, please, but it's a bit expensive. So across the board, the structural issue with U.S. healthcare goes far beyond politicians, our current government. This is an issue that has to be solved within our industry. It has to change. And you folks, the consumers, did we have deep fried Twinkies down there, Zach, tonight? I didn't see them. Maybe we'll have them afterwards. But the fact that people can go out and order these and get these, and also there's a funny marketing ploy here. It's your Marlboro cigarettes or your chicken noodle soup. I mean, who knows which one is which here? It actually is your Marlboro soup, or is it my chicken noodle cigarettes? I'm not sure. But at some point, where do the consumers come into this? I was driving back from this little farmhouse that we have, and I stopped at a stop sign in these stoplight, and these two young ladies were stopped there. They were stopped at the stoplight, so they're obeying the stoplight, and they had a valid license plate because it had a registration, but both were smoking, and neither had their seatbelt on. So where does the consumer accountability come in? The rates of obesity in this country are going to bankrupt our country. They do predict a major class action lawsuit against Hershey, Nestle, General Mills, and the rest based on what's happening with foods right now. And there's a lot of energy going into how do we stop these sorts of activities with the consumers? And one way to do it is to make them pay more. We just had a meeting with John Dineen, who runs GE's healthcare, and the average deductible for a GE employee, I think, is between $4,000 and $5,000. That'll make you change your behavior. Makes sense, though. So we have a fundamental problem with healthcare. It's unaffordable. The shutdown and this Obamacare thing the press has come up with is just a distraction. So we're a bit on the rocks right now. So, and just so you know, change is around us. I was actually just in Oxford a few weeks ago. This is where I used to study. This library was built by Duke Humphrey, based in the 1570s, I think. And now I'm not even sure we should have a library in the schools that my daughter go to. And it's only been a couple hundred years. This is the way I was trained to operate, with instruments. Now I look up. I use chopsticks and video screens, high-definition video. I use 60-inch high-definition screens to operate. And so I'm in probably the middle part of my career, so it does help my eyes that I can actually see these beautiful big screens. This is my great-uncle, William Watson, operating in the South Pacific. Think of wartime surgery today. So change is all around us. And this is a young lady that I operated on. There's nothing identifiable here, but I took out about 2 feet of her colon, and where's the incision? Can't see it, can you? There was one small poke hole there, and there's a couple down here below her bikini line, and that's it. So we've come a long way from these big, big incisions that go right in the middle for Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis into this modern era, and changes around us. So I think everything I've said before is positive. Everything I've said up to this point, the forces for change in healthcare are good. We simply have to stop doing what we're doing. And the question is how. And I'll say it again, that there's a tremendous amount of confusion because of healthcare.gov. There's a lot of dynamics here in Pittsburgh, shall we say. And people are wondering, what does healthcare mean for me? So we had something very funny come, which is the digital age. Does anybody want to pick a date when the digital age started? This is a good exercise, actually. When did the digital age actually come? So when did the Black Plague come? We know the bubonic plague came in the 1660s in Europe. It cleaned out a third of Europe. Okay, we've got that. When did the nuclear age come? We sort of have a good idea of that, obviously in World War II, and it defined our postmodern society because there was a very defined event, and then another one a few days later. But when did the digital age come? This is a strange one. Any guesses? Hey, that's interesting. What's that? Based on what? Curious.
Beginning of the
ARPANET. Interesting. What was that?
Sure.
Well, I guess I'm a little bit young in looking at this one, but I think it's 2007 when this thing collided with our society. This had the works. The electron was invented in the 1870s, I think, or 1860s. We didn't know what to do with it. Now our society's run by it. So it took a long time for us to understand RAM, computers, transmissions, networks, DSLs, Fios, computers, cell phones, laptops, tablets, voicemail, voice activation, touch phones, series, and we ended up with an event probably around 2006, 2007, 2008, where all of a sudden it was here to stay and it was not going away. It had its origins in all the dates that you mentioned, but this thing came here to stay, I think around 2007, when our society became different. Can you imagine going back from a digital age? Think of it. Who here has a 4G cell phone? Just raise your hand out of curiosity. Look around the room. Isn't that staggering? Okay, for the geeks in the room, who here has more than two devices with 4G on them? Strong work. Who here, when they travel, carries two phones, a computer, and a tablet? See? There's a few of them. At our meetings that we do at UPMC, it is, I would say, 80% of the room has at least two 4G devices, and about 80% has at least one phone, a computer, and a tablet. I actually travel with three phones, if you can believe it, a blank phone, an active phone, another active personal phone, a computer, and then my iPad mini, which is my ectopic brain. If I lose my mini, I just start drooling and scratching my head and wondering what I'm supposed to do next. But it's an interesting era of connectivity, because there's a lot that we can do. When I travel a fair amount, how can we do it? This is a wonderful cartoon. Anyone know what OMG means? That means oh my God in shorthand. So it's a baby texting from the crib that just got born. There's many different ways to look at it, but this is a generation that we're dealing with that we have to learn how to deal with. I was at a party and I watched a two-year-old pick up an iPhone and take pictures of bananas and show it to me. I watched my daughter as a 3.5-year-old get the iBird program on the iPhone and navigate it around. It would make endless bird calls in the back of my car with my wife and we were driving at the age of 3. And it was very funny. Then it became Name That Bird by the age of 4. And who would have thunk that you had a piece of glass with a button you could touch and talk to that ran our lives? And what tree did that thing chop down? The iPhone, what did it fell? BlackBerry. Remember BlackBerry? Do you remember our addictions to BlackBerries, that little rollerball and the commercials? I was even filmed for some BlackBerry commercial. They're gone. They're being sold for patents. They're being liquidated. So this age is upon us. You'll find graphs, and I'm sorry, it's hard to get high-resolution visualizations of these graphs, but look at the number of years for adoption and the percentage of ownership. The radio did fairly well, so did the TV, and actually a good one was the air conditioner, which we don't have on here. But look at the cell phone and internet and the tablet, it's even steeper. Look at this. So this is an era in our society that we've never seen before. This one's coming quickly, and it's coming very fast, and it's moving beyond what I think a lot of us can expect and predict, to be honest with you. Who would have thunk it? I have Fios at my house right now. I do remote desktop into other houses. You can do home monitoring and computers and cameras. It's just absolutely incredible. So I would venture a guess, and I mean, this number is debatable, but the point of this number is that at some point, this was here to stay. There are roots that go back to the late 19th century because of the electron, but this thing came here around 2007 because it was the end of the DSL. It was the beginnings of Fios. You saw this iPhone thing kind of come around. The iPod came a month after 9/11. And so these things were coming in full swing. The iPhone was here. We started to see portable laptop batteries. And this whole thing had changed. So now when we communicate, who here does Skype or FaceTime out of curiosity? Isn't that incredible? I was in Rome on a business trip. I was there for 4 hours. And so jet lag, putting it mildly, was on my mind. But I pulled out my Mini. Has anyone used Google Translate? That's incredible. So I pulled out my little iPad Mini, and we were going around Rome, and the person who was driving me around didn't speak any English. And, of course, my Italian's weak because I speak nothing. And I was able to go to Google Translate and type in a phrase, and then it would translate it to Italian. I hit the speak button, I'd hold it up, and it would speak to him. So I wasn't sure if he really got this or not. So I said, "Does your prime minister still have a 17-year-old girlfriend?" And he started laughing, so I think he gets the message. So it worked. So I was all over the place. That's incredible. And then my daughter came back from Ellis, and she wanted to see what was going on. So I hung my Mini out the window as we drove past the Colosseum and the Pantheon, and I showed her those, and she was talking to people. It was fascinating, again. So who here does not have a home phone right now? Who here does not give up the landline? Look at that. So the home phones are gone. Do you have a Skype number instead? Watch out for Google Plus. That's a little spooky. Google Voice? I'm too scared to do that. I learn every day. I do that. I live on Dragon. I use Dragon all the time. That is mind-blowing. But look at these things. We have Digs. Who uses Digs? You know, Dig is thumbs up, thumbs down. You see something? You like something? Was that helpful? Yes. Dig. Don't dig it. Thumbs down. Emails. Online banking. Amazon. Amazon Prime's giving eBay a run for its money. We talked about all these devices we had. My mother's here tonight. She came to hear me. I tried to explain the cloud to her last night. I couldn't even explain it. But think of the cloud. Dropbox is incredible. I have 7 different devices that I use that are all on Dropbox. Everything is synchronized immediately no matter where you are. It revolutionizes how you do work. And it's also secure, fairly secure. And these phones with voice, I saw a person had a 41-megapixel camera on a phone. The picture was incredible. Never seen this before. We have LTE. LTE will be a gigabit in the next couple of years, by the way, up and down. Right now, it's about, 40, 50 megabits up and down? It'll be a gigabit fairly soon. They're already hanging the light radios around Pittsburgh. These are small boxes. Get rid of those big towers on the sides of the hill, thank God. So real-time location services, it knows where you are. Google knows where you are. And then apps, and then Bump. I mean, look at this whole process. And then Dragon's a good example. I didn't put that down, but I use Dragon naturally speaking at work. So when I dictate my notes, it takes about 4 or 5 minutes to dictate my notes and go to a doctor. In the past, it took 22 days. And it's about 99% accuracy. So this digital age is all around us. And so we have at our fingertips all these devices. We have apps around us. We have bits and bytes flowing at us in the cloud, and we have videos now a commodity. So what? I think it's a lot, actually. My wife's brother-in-law and I were hiking on the Appalachian Trail 2 weeks ago in New York, and his kid was misbehaving. So here he is FaceTiming with his kid from the Appalachian Trail saying, "Behave." And I thought that was classic. I said, only in this modern age could you hike. And obviously we're near New York City, but still. But I just thought that was a great picture. And I was at this crazy Starbucks that we have, and someone brought the computer down to Starbucks. Isn't that great? So they've got their coat here, their purse here, and they're at Starbucks in the line. It's like bringing your child to work. So this is what we actually see now. People bring their computers and hang up their purses in a Starbucks. So the reality of this digital age is all around us. It is an incredible time. So what do we do with this? We've talked about healthcare is in a challenging spot right now in many ways, financially, from a political standpoint, and the press is all over it right now. They think it's a good thing to hop on the bandwagon and take a swing at healthcare on a national level. And the healthcare.gov didn't help, and that's a small thing that will go away, and that will be fine. And there's certainly a lot of teething issues with it. I certainly respect that. But we're going to see a tremendous change as the 2007, which is a putative date that I've created, but I think there's some degree of certainty there, as that digital age collided with healthcare that was already stumbling, the end result will be a phenomenal form of healthcare. And it's something that's happening here in Pittsburgh, and I'll talk to you a bit about this later on, but there are some very special things and unique things happening here in Pittsburgh with this combination. And I'm not going to get up here and give you a UPMC infomercial. I haven't done it yet. But I do think it's important that you understand what's going on here in Pittsburgh with healthcare, because there are some tremendous advancements happening right here that are saving lives, saving patients, saving time, saving families, and is the future of healthcare right here. And it's something we should also be very proud about as a city. And this goes far beyond the UPMC Highmark issue, shall we say. It's something that, as a city, we should be proud of. And I grew up in Pittsburgh, and we're a very proud city. We've been through a lot together with the steel mills and the collapse of the steel mills and our Steelers up and down. We've got to talk about a little sports. But we have this digital era here, and there's this tremendous presence of Google here. UPMC's investment in the digital era is tremendous. We have Carnegie Mellon. We have the University of Pittsburgh. So Pittsburgh has a prominent role in the digital era. We should be proud of that. So this cobra of an internet RJ45, Jack, coming down to get the doctor is, or the providers, somewhat apropos, because what does this mean? So in the next few minutes, I want to take you through four things. Some IT stuff, health information technology core infrastructure, and try to show you what that means to you. Talk about telemedicine and these procedural suites where I live, my office. I want to take you on a tour of my office, what my patients have to see, and also through analytics. And my patients come from all over the place to see me. I operated on a young lady who drove up to see me from Maryland. I've operated on folks from Georgia. I've operated on folks from overseas. I do most of my work from folks within the Western Pennsylvania region here or in the tri-state region. But when a patient comes and sees me in the clinic, who here wants to carry a paper record? Who here he does carry a paper record? Who here has their medical records with them? Anybody? That's incredible, isn't that? Wow, that's scary, isn't that? By the way, if they ever had a chip I could put in the back of my neck and put my medical records on there, I would. Why not? Because if you had a stroke or a heart attack and fell over, who's going to speak for you? Nobody. And I do travel a fair amount, for better or for worse. So when my patients come and see me, this is what you want access to. This is UPMC's health information core infrastructure. We invested $1.5 billion into this, and I want to show you why. By the way, the total cost of the three stadiums, do you know what they were? It was $890 million. We voted against two of them, I think, but we're going to pay for them for a long time. And I mean, I enjoy them too. I'll be hypocritical in saying that, but this is, again, those are about $890 million. The infrastructure here is $1.5 billion. This is what keeps our patients alive and well. When my patients come to clinic, they have records. They are automatically scanned if there's any paper records that come, and these are immediately available throughout anywhere that we have access actually to our network securely in the world. And if labs are drawn, and my patients see me on a Thursday morning, by Thursday afternoon, the labs are back. They're in my inbox. I can call the patients on their cell phone securely and give them the feedback. In the past, that was at least 3 weeks. When I started my clinics without this infrastructure, it would take 3 to 4 weeks to get the pathology results back. You come to my clinic, we talk about colorectal cancer, we hope that you didn't have it, and they go home fretting. We have these results back in a digital fashion immediately. I had a patient have a CAT scan Saturday morning at St. Margaret's. At 8:45, he called me at 8:49 and said, "I'm out of the scanner." I was actually going for a little run while my daughter was at piano class, so I just hopped off the trail and pulled up my iPad mini. I saw his CAT scan on the iPad mini. I saw the final read from the radiologist that was done 7 minutes later, and I called him on his cell phone and said, "You're fine." Now, I was running through a remote part of Pittsburgh on an iPad mini on a wireless network, and that patient knew within 11 minutes of leaving the CAT scanner that he was fine from two experts, a radiologist and a surgeon. That's the way healthcare should be. And that was available anywhere in the world. And so my patients get scans, they're available immediately. I can route letters and communicate through patients securely if all my patients try to at least on secure messaging. We can do all these components in the cloud. We have two data centers, one's based at Center and the street that's right by Shadyside Hospital that Winchester's on. The other one's based in Forbes Tower on Myron Avenue in Oakland. These are state-of-the-art Tier 4 data centers. And these are some of the most sophisticated data centers that you have in the world. These have virtualization. They have our electronic health records, our radiology systems. Our data is available. We've looked very carefully at the data. We put it into the cheapest level of storage because it does not need to be that expensive. It's available within nanoseconds. You can spend about a fraction of the cost. It's fully redundant. And all of these things exist in the cloud. Our patients all live in the cloud. All 5 million records exist in the cloud. And we had a situation where, do you remember when there was a tremendous flooding about 3 years ago in August and they had the Washington Boulevard and the huge rainstorm? I was in the OR and the lights flickered on and off, which I've never seen before. And the machines all stayed on, the ventilators were fine, they flickered off again, and the whole building began to vibrate. We had no idea what had happened. And there was a noise that went off. It was a disaster siren. I've never heard that before. And they came in and said very politely, would you please get out of the OR as soon as possible, which means hurry up. And I said, well, we'll get there as soon as we can. And as we lost all of the power to that part of the city, so both of our power supplies went down, which means that our data centers, very sophisticated, in a very sophisticated fashion, went onto batteries. And as they went to batteries, they dropped the hospital lights and started turning off the hospital lights by effect to bring the hospitals dark to conserve the power. And meanwhile, our networks and our data centers were on, and we could round with flashlights and tablets because all the patient data was secure and safe. And that's what it's like in a modern world. No matter where you are and what you're doing, we have secure access to these fiber optic networks that run through Pittsburgh. All of our patients live in the middle here, and we can do it no matter where we are. Once in a blue moon, I tend to get to Mexico with my lovely wife and daughter. We went to Cancun, and I got a call, and my wife loves when I get consults when I'm on vacation, about someone who had Crohn's disease, and they wanted to put a central line in and give the person intravenous nutrition. And a central line can be expensive. It's risky. The nutrition costs $1,000 a day. And on my cell phone, I said, give me a second. So I called the patient, I never met her, and said, hey, I'm coming back tomorrow morning. I can operate tomorrow afternoon. Do you want to go for it? She said, sure. And so we called the floor, said, no central line. I said, I've reviewed your records. I've seen your chart. I've seen your radiology. I've seen your colonoscopy. I don't think you need to have IV nutrition. I wouldn't want to have a line in. Why don't you just hold off for another day, and I'll operate tomorrow? And that's what we did. But that's the way healthcare should be, secure, fast, real-time, in the cloud. And that's what this is doing. This is, it's hard to know how you phrase this, but this is what keeps our patients alive. This is one of the largest and most sophisticated healthcare networks right now in the United States. And so that's the digital age. And I've never seen anything like this before. It saves lives and saves time all the time. So telemedicine is the second thing I wanted to tell you about. This is a great one. Anyone heard of telemedicine? Wow, I'm getting old. This is two ladies. She was the patient. This is the friend. They lived in Bedford. So Bedford is 90 miles away. And what lies in between us and Bedford? The Squirrel Hill Tunnel. Yes. We should be very proud in Pittsburgh that we have the eighth worst interchange in the United States, which is the Fort Pitt Tunnel. The other nine are all in New York and Los Angeles, but don't discount the Squirrel Hill Tunnel with honorable mention. So I have about a third of my patients actually have never driven to Pittsburgh, and they don't want to drive here. It's expensive to drive here. The average cost is about $135. It's about 3 to 4 hours, depending how you drive. There's parking, tolls, gas. Who's got to take care of your family when you're gone? And so many folks don't even drive. So my first patient in telemedicine was a Mennonite, and they don't have TVs, and I'd never done it. So they're looking at me, and I'm looking at them like, what is this? But they would have had to pay a driver to come to Pittsburgh to see me, and the patient did not have to come and see me. So this is a way of using these devices. These are live video screens with cameras, and patients can go to their communities, which can be 5 minutes away with free parking, without worry about hills, as somebody said, and weather and tunnels, and see me no matter where I am. And I do about a third of my practice in the cloud right now. And this is the telemedicine cloud that we have at UPMC. And so I can see patients, I can do preoperative visits, postoperative visits, I can do consults, I can see patients on the fly, I see patients in Monroeville, Bedford, Northwest, Horizon, And it doesn't matter where I am. It just matters where you should go. I want you to go close to your home, where you are, and I want it to be safe and easy. And we had a patient's relatives were killed on the way home from seeing her. And she was very young and had rectal cancer, and her relatives died on the way home in a car crash from the hospital. So we have never in the United States ever looked at the effect of travel on healthcare, on costs, satisfaction, and the impact on our quality of life. So telemedicine is cloud-based, video-based, virtual telemedicine that is a tremendous upswing for patients. And they love it. I have given chemotherapy orders, terminal diagnoses, good news, bad news, all through telemedicine. They just don't want to travel because it's too hard. I use this device today, and when I rounded on my two patients, I was in my office in the U.S. Steel Building, but the patients were in Montefiore Hospital, Oakland. And that little cart, which is an old cart, I love my old cart here, was wheeling around the floor, and they could see me on the screen, and I could see them with that camera. That's where I rounded today. So I rounded using telemedicine. And I have rounded from Paris, Brussels, Chicago, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, San Jose, where else? All around. So I've rounded from LaGuardia. The patient didn't believe me. I held up the camera and he was watching planes take off. And he loved planes. He was naming the planes for me. So patients love it. It was secure in a quarter. Nobody could see. I wear earphones. It's still personal. But the bottom line is I can see patients no matter where I am. And this is what it looks like. That's obviously a mock-up, but that's what we do. I'm on the screen, and I can see them, and they can see me. So if you wonder what this means, actually, this is the telemedicine center in Avera. Avera is in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Anyone been to Sioux Falls, South Dakota? Whew, I was there in last January. It was negative 9 degrees when I went to warm up the car like a gentleman. And I was quasi-regretting that decision. This is their telemedicine center. This person there, and as a physician also, it's a nurse, and these screens is looking at 200 intensive care unit beds across 7 different states. So one doctor and two nurses can staff 128 beds. Isn't that amazing? And they look at the monitors, they can see the patients, they can talk to the nurses, look at the vital signs, and the computers say, watch out, the heart rate went up by 20%. The temperature went up by 15%. In our normal society, that would never trigger an alarm, but they're looking at algorithms saying, watch out, that's early sepsis. They're showing a decrease in mortality, a decrease in the ICU length of stay, and a decrease in the morbidity from any hospital stay through telemedicine in the EICU. They are in 106 hospitals with ERs, and this is one of the largest telemedicine installations. UPMC is currently doing this as well. We have multiple consult centers. We are going into the employer space. We're looking at remote monitoring where patients can go home with devices that monitor your heart rate, your saturation, your blood pressure at home, your weight. It's a phenomenal way for us to take care of patients no matter where you are, where we are, but most importantly, the patients stay at home. We just started a patient portal, and so this will be released to the public probably in the next month or two. And if you have an urgent care type issue like a sore throat or a cough or abdominal pain, you can go online and see a physician from home or a nurse from home from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. How's that for consumerism? This is the first major portal that was developed outside of industry in the United States was here in Pittsburgh. The other ones have all been done by industry. There's a company called American Well, and typically it's done, it goes through your insurance company, goes right to you and tries to bypass and does bypass to some degree the nurses and doctors that you're used to. This portal is tied to your primary care physician, it's tied to your healthcare system. You can do it at home, you'll be able to do it on tablets, do it at work. That's the way healthcare should be. We're taking healthcare back to the patients in a digital era. It's what I want. We've got kids, right? Your kid gets sick in the morning. What's the last thing in the world you want to do? Go to a doctor's office? When does the Fort Pitt Tunnel get jammed? I hear it's 6:30, right? Isn't that fun? You're sick. It's snowing. Your kid's in the back. And you want to go to a doctor? No. You don't have to. It can all be done at home. All through the digital age. Isn't that incredible? And by the way, just a brief comment on my outcomes. This is just my telemedicine clinics. If you look at it, my clinics, I've done it from 4 different locations. I've gone to 4 locations. I've got 98% satisfaction with 21 different diagnoses. I've brought 35 surgeries into Pittsburgh. That's new revenue to the Pittsburgh. But most importantly, the patients didn't have to travel. And then only 2 patients refused. One was very funny. She wanted to come and smoke in the casino. So I guess that's something special about smoking in the casino. And the other person refused, was almost killed in a car crash. It's not funny, actually, in the turnpike. And she was just a mess when she arrived, and her next three visits were done with telemedicine. But look at the time saved. That's what the patients want. In the digital era, we've saved 800 hours of patient driving. That's better patient care. And we're also saving them money and expense. And the same with this rounding. When I round on patients, they're in the hospital. I've done 165 rounds now. Or the patients are in their bed in the hospital, the video cart comes to your room. No matter where I am, you can see me. So telemedicine is the second big part of the digital age. So the third part, I have about another 5 minutes or so left. But the third part is, look at welcome to my office. No one actually wants to be here, right? Look at these things. These rooms cost about $1 million. We have 26 of them that just went into our major tertiary facilities. They have high-definition video, state-of-the-art lights. You can see the video there. That's someone's gallbladder, and that's your liver, by the way. And CAT scans, vital signs, PET scans, all this can be done. And the beauty of it is that the information of your CAT scan you had done the day before goes right to the OR, and so we can look at it. In the past, we had to find your films, organize your films, put them on a film board, and try to look at them. We can actually telementor people around the world right now. These screens can look at surgeries in other people around the world. You can actually help people do surgeries around the world. You can spread the expertise that we have here to help others, especially in places of need. Look at the typhoon that just hit the Philippines. There's ways of getting telemedicine and healthcare into these locations. This is one of my favorite residents, Mackie Neal. He's from Punxsutawney. I've got a house here, Punxsutawney, and he is phenomenal. I've got hands of gold. He'll actually stay here in Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh's lucky to have him. He's a phenomenal surgeon. What's this? What's this strange device? This is a telementoring robot looking over his shoulder. So this is a wide-angle lens. That's a zoom lens. He can see me. I can see him, and that's a laser pointer. So through a laptop, anywhere in the world, I can actually telementor surgeons and show them this is how you do things. You can do it here. You can do it there. They can see me. I can see them. So what? I cannot tell you how many times I get called on the phone. I've got a 26-year-old man who's open on the table, whose bowel looks like it's dead. Should I take it all out? Now, it's a very valid question because this is all that I do for a living is colorectal surgery, those charming pictures I showed you up front. But what if you guess wrong? If you guess wrong, he dies. If you guess wrong, he could also lose all of his intestines, never eat again, and need an intestinal transplant. If you guess right, he goes home in 4 days. So we're making that decision with an anesthesiologist over a cell phone, holding up the phone to the surgeon's face. Is that right for the patients? Do you want to know how often that happens in the United States? That's not acceptable. Isn't it incredible in the ORs, the way that we were trained? If we call for help anywhere in the United States, they kind of say, why are you calling for help? Why would a surgeon ever go to the OR alone when this help device can be there right over your shoulder? This is the digital age. You will see this all over the place. When you go to the OR, you hope that thing's there too. Because if I have a problem or I have a question, I want someone else there with me. And this is the way the digital age is helping us. So no longer is the expertise that I have in my hands limited to Pittsburgh. And there are still times I'd like to have my partners around. I had a partner that was 3 weeks old come to the OR on Friday. 3 weeks, that should scare you, right? Right out of training. And he helped me do a case, and I welcomed his help. But I can also help him with this device. And so the last thing I want to show you is the real Watson, not this thing talking to you. Anyone ever watch this? What is this thing? What did it play? Jeopardy. Did it win? Scary, isn't it? That thing can read 200 million web pages a second. Wow. It has 18 terabytes of RAM. And a lot of factoids about this. So I actually went to IBM's executive briefing center and tried to play that thing in Jeopardy and got suitably crushed. But that's artificial intelligence. Holy smokes, this is the real deal. And the point of this is that this thing can sit there and analyze these web pages with a high degree of confidence and tell you in a nice way, this is what it thinks is going on. This is just the beginning. This is just the beginning of what we're going to see. So it can play a game, it can also diagnose what's wrong with you. Because do you know how much it costs to decode your genome now? A couple $100. This should be $1 million. So if you decode your genome, and you say you live in Pittsburgh, you give it your family tree, and you say, hey, before I go see this Watson, I want to ask this Watson for $50 what's wrong with me. This thing says, I think you got Crohn's, or I don't think you have Crohn's. And this Watson says, you've got Crohn's. Uh-oh. Then you can go online to our portal and get another opinion. But this is where healthcare is going. Is artificial intelligence, when I die, which I will someday, hopefully not soon, the expertise that I've accrued over my lifetime, like my father did as a surgeon, disappeared. We pass it on through medical students and through training, but it's a very primitive form of passing it on. These devices are going to look at what we've learned, and they're going to keep it. Isn't it bizarre when you type in Google the name of a restaurant you're thinking of, and next thing you know, it's there after three characters? That's where it's headed. Healthcare will be predictive. Now, this is a representation of what we're doing at UPMC. This is the largest healthcare analytics endeavor in the United States. We're looking at the financial outcomes, the clinical outcomes, the health plan insurance outcomes, and the purchasing outcomes to say, how are we doing? Where are we going with healthcare? Because that's what you want. How much do we spend? How are the physicians doing, nurses and doctors? How does the health plan look at this from a holistic population standpoint? And how much did it cost to do this from a purchasing standpoint? And it's going to tell us how we did. So if you want to change someone's behavior, you take this information and plug it into that with Oracle, and there you go. And that's what we're doing. So right now we describe, hey, what happened? What do we need to do? Then you predict, well, hey, Andrew, based on this patient coming to see you, this is probably what's going to happen. This is probably what's going to happen next. But fairly soon, it's going to tell you this is actually what you should do. Holy smokes, are doctors scared about this one? But ladies and gentlemen, this is the real deal, and you should each want that. That is the digital era. Think of the amount of computational energy in a MacBook Air compared to an old computer. That's the digital age. That's impressive. So the implications for you is that you're going to have access to healthcare everywhere in the next 5 years. Who's got a Fitbit? Oh, I got you on that one, didn't I? So a Fitbit is a device you wear on your arm. It's here, and it tells you how far you walked. It's got a little accelerometer. You got a jawbone. It's a Fitbit. How did I do? Ooh, I'm 4+. I'm probably 6,000 steps. And it tells you how well you slept, how much you walked. You're going to have access to healthcare and feedback on who you are, no matter where you are. There's a company in Israel who's just here talking to us at UPMC, and they charge consumers $50 a month in Israel, and it'll watch your rhythm continuously, your heart rate. And if you have an MI or at risk for an MI, it'll figure out you had one and call you and let the ambulance know, let the ER know as well. Pretty impressive. We'll have sensor data all around us about your blood pressure, your pulse ox, your heart rate, all of that. You'll make intelligent decisions based on the real Watson, that computer, based on portals. You'll be fully mobile no matter where you are. I'm sure we're going to have some crazy Dick Tracy watch with a telemedicine screen on it coming up. Who knows when? But the bottom line is to have artificial intelligence push healthcare and social media right with you, and that'll make you a healthier person. It'll make your healthcare less expensive and a much higher quality with unparalleled access that we have never seen before. And by the way, when was a face-to-face visit invented? So we come to my office, I see you face-to-face. When was that invented? That's a good question. About 400 BC or 600 BC with Hippocrates. That's when you separated disease, superstition, and religion. So we are breaking a face-to-face visit and saying healthcare can go through video screens in the digital age. And guess what? It works wonderfully. And patients love it. Right here in Pittsburgh, we have three organizations that are, these two are under the main umbrella, that the Technology Development Center is really leading the way with innovating in healthcare. You may not know, but UPMC was just ranked the most innovative country in the United States. Gap was number 4. Microsoft, I think, was number 8. AT&T was 35. Right here in Pittsburgh, the digital age is upon us with healthcare. I work at the Center for Connected Medicine. We have $450 billion of partners. Almost $500 billion of partners. This is the largest healthcare executive briefing center right now in the United States. GE, IBM, Verizon, Alcatel-Lucent, and the advisory board are our partners. This is showcasing the impact of the digital age on healthcare. This is the development, and this is the showcase under the parent company. Right here in your own backyard, it's being transformed. Healthcare is global. geography doesn't matter. We just signed a deal working with patients in India, trying to help learn from folks in India. They can learn from us. It's a way of actually exporting healthcare. It's part of our mission. It's part of our humanitarian mission, and it should be. We work here in Western Pennsylvania. We can work around the world. It's the way Pittsburgh grew up. We grew up in the steel industry. We didn't keep the steel. We exported the steel. It's how Pittsburgh made its mark. It's good for Pittsburgh. It brings patients to Pittsburgh. It brings visitors to Pittsburgh. It brings notoriety to Pittsburgh. It's good for Pittsburgh. But the most important thing is it's good for the patients. A good friend of mine started one of the early WiMAX portable networks. So when the tsunamis hit in Aceh, I think it was about 6 or 7 years ago, if not longer, they can go in there. They're doing it right now in the Philippines, dropping these RVs that have generators instead of WiMAX networks around the population and get access to health care. He also connected everybody during the Kosovo War, put the families back together with the internet that he started. So healthcare is now a digital world. So this digital transformation of healthcare is normal, natural, necessary, and unstoppable, and we will see the best years of healthcare with all thanks to the digital age. So thank you very much. I will turn this back over to Zach. I think I'm at T plus 50 minutes. I'm within time. And I think we take a quick 10-minute break and then have some questions. Am I correct, Zach? Okay. But thank you very much for your time and attention.